I'm noticing bass flipping cartwheels out of the water left and right.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
And just like that, we are into the dreaded summer lockjaw event. Happens every year, usually in August, but we're in the middle of another hot snap, heat wave, whatever you want to call it. Terrible, terrible. Lawns are dry. This spring, we had too much rain, and everybody I talked to said, yep, and this summer we're going to have a drought, and that's what we're going through. Mowed the lawn the other day, I blew out more dust than grass. It was awful. So the dreaded dog days of summer are here. But I got to tell you about the last two trips I had because I beat all odds. And the first trip goes directly to what I've talked about, and that is circles of awareness, because it turned the morning around for me completely. I went to a local lake. Well, here's the thing. My bass count every year, I'm trying to break 1,000, and I was at 662, and I wanted to break 700. So I had the morning, and there's a place that's probably 40 minutes from me that the last 2 years, it has gone downhill. I mean, it's a place where I could usually count on getting 50, 60 bass. I had one summer, I hit it three times, and I averaged 70 bass. I mean, the first trip, I caught 70. The second trip, I caught 71. The third time I was there late in the year, I caught 69. I averaged 70 bass a day, going there for 7 hours, that whole year. I fished it three times. Now, the last 2 years, I've seen a decline in the catch rates there. And this is just my own experience. I'm still going like three times a year the last 2 years, but I noticed a lot of new growth in vegetation. It was actually getting weed choked in some parts of this body of water. It's at a high elevation. It's way up in the foothills of the Catskills. It's high. The elevation is high. So usually when I go there, the mornings are cooler. The water's always cooler there. It takes until mid-July till you really start seeing lily pads there. I mean, and I'm not kidding. It's spring fed, and it takes a long time for the lily pads to come out and emerge. It, conversely, there's a lake, you know, 40 minutes south of me, headed down the other way. It's a very shallow fishery. It's called Franklinton Vly. It's 6 foot deep at the deepest point, and it's got a mud bottom. It's a healthy fishery. And when the ice goes out, 2 days later, 2 days after ice out, the lily pads are halfway to the surface. You know, that's crazy. And then I have another place where it takes July before you see lily pads. So there's extremes. No matter where you live, you're going to see extremes like that. And I just find it fascinating and interesting because I keep track of all this stuff. So my bass count prior to last Saturday, 3 days ago, was at 662 bass for this year. Wanted to break 700 bad. And I've been wanting to go to this place, this high elevation lake, but having the morning and wanting to break 700, I knew I needed 38 bass to do that. I always like to set goals, always like to challenge myself, but I had a feeling the way this high elevation lake had declined the last 2 years, I mean, my numbers had dropped significantly. I probably averaged somewhere around 20 bass per trip the last 2 years I was there. 25 would be pressing it. That's how much the bite had declined. And like I said, it had gotten weed choked, which was unusual for there. So I opted to go to a place that's not 10 minutes away where I've had some really, really good days. And I went there thinking, if I go here, I can get the 38 that I need, and I can probably do it in the morning. So my propensity for throwing a spinnerbait, I went there. I started, you put in by the dam, and I worked across the dam with spinnerbait. Not getting any action on a spinnerbait whatsoever. It's dead calm. And there's a little bit of a lip at the dam. It's maybe 2-3 feet deep, out about 10 feet. Then it just plunges. And I throw a Senko out there. First cast with the Senko, I load up, catch a bass. Second cast with the Senko, I hook one and he jumps off. I cannot get another bite. So I start throwing a big black and blue jig and craw. I get a couple contacts. I hook a couple fish and they both pull off. Usually I can do pretty good off the dam in the morning, you know, get 5-6 fish. I've caught one and I'm just not getting anything else to fire. So I go start going up the side of the lake and eventually I get one on my jig. So that was good, but I couldn't duplicate, just a random fish. So I start throwing my spinnerbait. There's a couple docks. I'm throwing a spinnerbait around the dock. Finally, I hook one and I get it in. This is my third fish. I've been there. I look at my watch. I've been there 50 minutes. On a typical day, I should have 8 or 10 by now. And I'm thinking, yeah, I avoided going to the high elevation lake so I could come here comfortably fish and with confidence I'm going to get my 38. And it's fishing like the other lake now. And here we are. You know, it's the dreaded summer lockjaw. So I start fishing up that bank. I go out and there's a lot of weed growth here now. This lake does get a lot of weed growth in the summertime, but usually you can fish around the edges with a topwater and get fish to fire, but it's not happening. And I'm really having to work for the bites I'm getting. I did finally get a few going on a spinnerbait, but because of the emergent vegetation, I'm running out of water fast in the upper end. But I can see a lot more open areas on the other side. So I come down and I circle around and I start going to these other open areas. And eventually I hit double digits. I have 10 fish, 28 more to go. And I'm just, they're not biting like they typically will. So I'm thinking, well, maybe they're just hanging a lot deeper because of the water. The water temp was 77 degrees, which is pretty warm for this body of water. I move down towards the bottom end, back down towards the dam. I'm fishing along and I'm picking up one here on a jig. I did get one on a Senko. I know you use the Senko a lot and I know it's a fantastic bait. But with my spinner baits and crank baits, I lean more towards power fishing because I like working a bait. And the way I fish a Senko, I'll throw it out and I'll just let it slowly drop and I'll watch my line. If the line doesn't take off, I'll give a couple pulls and let it sink again. It's slow motion fishing is what it feels like to me. And if they're not responding right away, I go back to my power fishing techniques. And I think I got up where I had like 17 and I'm looking up the lake and I'm noticing the area that I left where it was more open, but it's shallower. It's maybe 4 or 5 foot deep with a lot of submergent vegetation. Well, in that mix of open water and the emergent vegetation, I'm noticing bass flipping cartwheels out of the water left and right. Everywhere I look, there's bass flying out of the water, doing cartwheels. And you know what they're doing? They're feeding on dragonflies. And I call this the dragonfly connection. It clicked in my mind like a light bulb. And here we go to circles of awareness. As I'm fishing and occasionally getting a bite, I'm seeing these fish from the area I left jump and flip and clear out of the water, feeding on dragonflies. Right then and there, you should recognize that number one, those are actively feeding fish. If you want to catch fish, you got to be around actively feeding fish. And where I'm fishing, the bites were pretty sparse. Like I said, I've got 17 now, but I've been there like 2.5 hours and I'm nowhere near my goal. I'm not even halfway to my goal of 38 bass, but I know looking up the lake, I can see there's bass that are actively engaged in feeding. I need to get around those fish. So I hightailed it right back up there. I slow down when I get close and I lock my boat in position, anchor down, and I start throwing a spinnerbait and I'm starting to get a few bites. And if I saw a fish break, I could crank in quick, fire that spinnerbait where that fish just broke, and I get about 2 turns of the reel handle and I'd lock up on them. But the Senko worked even better. If I was running a spinnerbait and I had just made a cast and a fish broke off to the side, I would drop that rod, pick up the Senko, drop it where that fish was, and immediately you'd see the water roll and I would just swing. It was magic. I lit them up. And this dragonfly bite lasted about 2 hours. They were just flipping out of the water left and right. All I would do was throw a spinnerbait or a Senko where I saw that fish break. And I'd say 90% of the time I hooked up. It was rare that I threw in on a fish and they didn't react. And
what day was this?
Saturday.
So I'll tell you a story to go along with yours. The dragonfly bite at the camp I was at on our lake out there, not our usual one, but a different one I was at.
Right.
Same deal. Clobbering the surface for those dragonflies.
That's
for,
what's
for,
happening
for a couple
right
of
now.
Hours. Ours was in the evening, like late afternoon, but it was happening, and that was the most activity I'd seen with that all summer.
I was catching them on a Senko, and I'm unhooking a Senko, and their throats are plugged with dragonflies, and you could see the dragonflies just above the surface, and it was unreal. The best one I caught was 4 pounds 2 ounces. That's actually the picture that you use for this podcast. That was and I did an Instagram post with that fish, and I got a lot of comments on it, so thanks to everybody who sent me some nice comments on that. I had a slew of comments, but it was a nice fish. That was the best one of the day. But a lot of 2 pound class fish, again, that one was 4 pounds 2 ounces. It was just a dynamic bite, and circles of awareness, I happen to recognize
that.
Happen
to that. Not silence your phone.
What's that?
Was that your phone you just silenced?
No. I silenced it before we started.
Well, then your wife's phone just went off.
Yeah, mine doesn't have
you
that.
You had her phone under control with the TV. Couldn't control the extra loud ringtone.
I'm closing the door.
Shh, honey, I'm recording my podcast.
So that was the dragonfly connection. That's definitely what clued me in to the dragonfly bite that was going on, and it salvaged my morning. I ended up getting my 38 to break 700, and I fished 5.5 hours total, and I landed a total of 53 largemouth. It was, and a perch that hit a spinnerbait. So it was just a dynamic bite. And the entire morning was salvaged by recognizing that there were actively feeding fish and going to those fish. And just, I was broadcasting the area and catching a few, but every time I saw one broke and threw in on it, it was almost a guaranteed hookup. And they were good fish. So keep your eyes open when the bite is slow. Look for clues like that. On big lakes, a lot of times you'll see seagulls. You follow the birds because they're diving on bait that's surfacing. There's generally bass underneath those schools of bait. So if you see birds work in the water, get over there and start throwing a crankbait or something like that and get in on the feeding frenzy.
Bilbyism alert. Bilbyism alert.
What did I say this time?
Broadcasting.
Yeah, that's what I call it.
I think that's an interesting way to use that word. I don't think that it's ever been used in that way before. Have you heard it used in that way before? Broadcasting.
No, I don't think so. That's
it's an interesting way to say it. I am slightly doing my thing where I poke at you, but that is a good word. It's a good bilbyism. That's
one that you like. I appreciate that.
Builded. It's not as good as builded, but broadcasting is a
builded
good one.
Builded was a slip of the tongue.
But broadcasting is a Freudian slip because we are broadcasting.
But when I'm covering water with a spinnerbait, I'm broadcasting the area. That's what I call it. I'm covering water.
But if you land a topwater out there, it's broadcasting to the other fish that are in the area that it just landed on the water. A lot of broadcasting and casting for fish.
That's a JD-ism right there.
A JD-ism.
So today, I went to my high elevation lake to check on it and see how I could fare. Now, once I'd broke my 700, I'm like, yeah, gravy train now. I got plenty of time. I know I'll break 1,000 this year, as long as I get to keep fishing, good Lord willing. So let me go check on that body of water now that I have taken the self-imposed pressure off myself. I drive up there this morning and it's foggy. I mean, I was there early. I left before 6 a.m. So I put the boat in. Of course, I'm the only one there. And there's a, you launch by a dam on this lake too. And I usually throw a jig and craw across that dam, which I did. And I had one fish pick up, couldn't get a hook in it. I caught nothing off the dam this morning. And I had taken two spinnerbait rods, my jig and craw rod. I took the Senko rod because it's a good technique there. And although I don't use a Senko a lot, that's one of the places I do use it because the fish respond really well to it. And I also took a custom-built rod that was built for me by Eric Malone, the first president of the SUNY Cobleskill Bass Club, dear friend of mine, lives in New York City now. He built me two custom rods using Phoenix blanks. He built me a drop shot rod that is just like a magic wand. And I use that with a light jig head to throw like a 3-inch Senko. And that's worked for me on this lake before. I took that in case it was a really, really tough bite. And I actually caught my first fish on that today. But typical, I was there for almost an hour. I had four fish. It was a grind. And I just couldn't get much going. And I'm looking all over the place to see if they're feeding on dragonflies, and they're not because it's too early. There was some mist, some fog. It was 65 degrees. It was actually nice. You could feel humidity in the air, but the air was cool. There was a lot of moisture in the air. There was a lot of fog on the drive up. I'm throwing my spinnerbait, broadcasting it in the general areas. There's a, the lily pads were up, but they were in narrow bands. And as the day progressed, I noticed that the vegetation that was topped out last year was non-existent. I'm not seeing it anywhere. And there is some submergent grass, but it's a different kind. So my guess is after the last 2 years of it being so weed choked, there's a park in this area, and this lake is within that park. So I'm guessing the park association treated the lake for the weed growth this spring because the water had a brownish color to it. There was like suspended particles, and that's typical when you kill the weeds. The water doesn't clear up because the vegetation is what filters the water. So there was a lot of color to the water. I still had about 3 foot of visibility, and my best spinnerbait was a Terminator Tiny T, a 1/8 ounce model, white and chartreuse with silver blades, willow leaf, and a Colorado blade. And what I was doing was just outlining the lily pad fields. They were in narrow bands, and I was just running it to those outside edges. And anywhere there was a little notch or cut in the pads, I would throw that spinnerbait in. And I started hooking up regularly. And I ended up having a fantastic day, which is unusual because the last 2 years, my numbers had really declined on this body of water. And typically when they remove vegetation, the fish scatter and get much harder to locate. Today was the polar opposite, although they did gravitate to the lily pads. So that was the cover that they were utilizing. And I would occasionally hear a fish boil in there, and I could throw a Senko or a spinnerbait in there, and it was just like Saturday. In the afternoon, they started feeding on the dragonflies and got a little bit easier to locate. But after about noon, 12:30, the bite really, really dropped off. I had 45, and I was thrilled, more than doubling my average from the last 2 years. But when all was said and done, at the end of the day, I fished 7 hours there. And when I pulled out, I had 57 bass, 57 largemouth on my digital counter. So it ended up being, it exceeded my expectations, I'll put it that way. When they killed the vegetation, they gravitated to the lily pads and the laydowns and anything that they could relate to. In the upper reaches of this body of water, there are some laydowns and some muddy areas, and there's a beaver lodge, and it gets less than a foot deep back in there. And where some of the laydowns are, and there's a bush out in the water's just inches deep. And I ran a spinnerbait through the cut there where it's about 4 inches deep, and there was a huge boil and a roll of water, and I hooked this fish. His back was out of the water the whole time until he got across that hump, And then it was about 2 foot deep where I was fighting him, and he was all over the place. Got wrapped up around the anchor line, got wrapped up and everything he possibly could. And I thought he was going to break off, but he did not. And I got my thumb in his mouth and landed him. And I had a lot of better quality fish today. Probably a third of my fish that I caught in that body of water today were way, way better than average. Usually you get one or two of those a trip, but a third of my fish today were like that. And I don't know what the explanation is for that, unless they just got big over the last couple of years when I wasn't catching very many. They were feeding big time. They all looked like they had a belly with a bullfrog in it. They had swollen guts and they were feisty. I got pretty soaked on a few of those fish today, splashing water every which way. The other thing is, and I'll throw this out there, I was, because the water was shallow and there was abrasions and they were wrapping me up and stuff, I was frequently checking my line, and I actually retied a number of times today. If you ever feel any abrasions down where your connection is, your knot is tied to your lure, by all means, take 30 seconds, cut it off, retie, good fresh knot before you get back to fishing. I hate to admit, like last week I was fishing a place. I knew there was a rough spot in my line, but I said, you know, I'm probably not going to catch a big enough fish to worry about that. And once you know, maybe three fish later, I hook a monster and my line breaks. And I got nobody to blame but myself. So today, when I was catching a lot more better than average fish, I made it a point to constantly retie. And I never broke off a fish today. So, and that's good sage advice for anybody. That's something I never used to do. And I think a lot of newer fishermen don't do it that much. But you should always check your line down by your lure. And if you feel any nicks or abrasions whatsoever, cut off and retie. It's going to save you lures and it's going to save you fish. So with those two trips, Saturday and today, I actually banked another 110 bass in my logs, which moved me up to 772. So I'm knocking on the door of 1,000 here very shortly. And I'm also knocking on the door of 38,000 bass caught and released since I started counting them back in 1986. We're getting real close, JD. We're within just a handful over 200 fish, and we'll be there. I think 212.
You can do it.
I will do it. It's going to happen. It is inevitable because I don't intend to stop fishing. So, and it's only, I mean, it's not even August yet. I got 5 months left. August is usually a real lean month. Once we get into September and the days are shorter, cooler evenings, a few cooler days, a couple cold fronts, that water temperature is going to start dropping, and we get into October, November. November, that is the month for me when it is lights out. And I will get you out on a trip when we're going to bank 60, 80 smallmouth. I will do that with you. You've got to experience that.
I hope so.
And it can happen right on the lake where you live.
There was a gentleman with his son out in a pedal boat, renters from down the street. And they bought a couple of spinning rods and some chigger craws.
Tremendous bait.
And we're throwing those Texas rig. And we're slaying smallmouth right off my shore out there. I was watching it. I was like, you guys are catching more fish than I've ever caught out there. Good job.
Good job. Now get off my lawn.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. No, I was happy to see him out there. I was going to, you know, maybe throw them a bag of plastics if they needed anything, but they were catching fish just fine. And they were very Southerners.
Yep.
That were out there.
You should have marched out there with a pair of shorts on, a dirty T-shirt, black socks up to your knees, wearing sandals and saying, hey, you know, this is private property. You can't fish here.
So my neighbor is always yelling at people that go by too fast. He screams no wake from his deck.
No wake! Well, no wake!
There's three or four signs there that say that. I always respect that.
The amount of people that do not respect that
I know
astound you. more folks disrespected than respected. We'll put it that way. We definitely have.
Oh, I believe that 100%. I've seen people do it. I do not do that. I'm there as a guest to borrow the water for the day. I'm going to be respectful, but I've seen people blow through it. There's four signs there, you know, have a little courtesy. People have boats on dock. I wouldn't want somebody blasting through if I had my boat tied to a dock.
No.
That's where the term dock rash comes from. Idiots that don't pay attention to the no wake signs.
So he's got tires on his dock against his cobia that's out there. Vintage cobia. Yeah. But it gets it rocking.
Yeah.
And it, you know, so.
No, people should respect that. That is a pet peeve of mine. And I don't even live on the water. So
get off your lawn.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody listening, if you're charging through no wake zones, please stop doing that. Be respectful. We all share the water. Be respectful. If it says no wake, take it off pad. Please be courteous.
There you go. And while you're at it, courteously slide into Roy's DMs at all lowercase Roy Bilby on Instagram.
And we appreciate you listening as always, trying to get more of these episodes out. To get the information out to help you tap into your angler within.